and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to the Eastern Michigan Eagles week as one of the best teams in the MAC conference. Yes, that's the same one where PJ Fleck ended up coming over from, is heading to Huntington Bank Stadium here on Saturday night as Chris Creighton's team tries to pull yet another Power 5 upset, of which they've had a lot of success in recent years of doing.
Yeah, so it again, MAC level opponent, and as you said, these group of five opponents, the tradition is that, you know, they move up and they don't necessarily do well. Minnesota's had some success with MAC opponents, but they've also found some challenges in recent memory. Ryan, you'll remember back to like Northern Illinois and the Jerry Kill era. This was pre Jerry Kill being a part of University of Minnesota. Minnesota struggled against Bowling Green, etc. So this is not a guaranteed win by any stretch of the imagination. And as you said, Eastern Michigan, it looks like they are 4-4 in their last eight games against Power 5 opponents. They've found some success. Now, they didn't exactly have success against teams that, it's not like they beat Alabama, right? But they found some wins for sure.
Yeah, to your point, they remind me of a Jerry Kill coached NIU team. They're tough. They're very disciplined. Probably don't have as much skill as what we've seen previously, but this is obviously a conference that has come in recently and beaten Minnesota in Huntington Bank Stadium as Bowling Green did just a couple years ago. But we'll get into it a little bit later in terms of how I see this game going. I think very clearly to me it goes one of two ways.
Mm-hmm.
Even from talking with Kenneth Bailey from Hustle Belt, which is one of the publications that actually covers the MAC conference. I mean, by the time you're listening to this, he flat out predicts Eastern Michigan to win this football game. He's seen Eastern Michigan and Chris Creighton do it against Power 5 competition, but there's some interesting nuances with this game to get into. So it's for those of you planning just to show up Saturday night and expecting a 20-point victory, very well may happen considering the spread for this game, 20.5 points. But there's a lot of things that have to happen from week one to week two for both teams if that's going to be the case.
Yeah, and I do want to highlight, last year you'll see that they upset Arizona State. Arizona State fired their coach. Do you remember that story, Ryan? Arizona State, fired the coach in the locker room, if memory serves. It was just a crazy, crazy bit. It's Herman, what's his name?
Herm Edwards.
Yeah, Herman Edwards.
Maybe you know him as Herman. I don't know. Do you talk in text more than people know?
Yeah, more than people know. But one thing that I found interesting too, Ryan, just looking up some history on them, last season, Eastern Michigan actually played one of the Gophers' opponents from this season, which is Louisiana, the Ragin' Cajuns, and they lost 21-49. So there is a data point.
Yes and no. It's a common opponent, but last year's team is just like we've seen this year's team is so much different than last year's team. But it should be a game where if you show up, this game I think is going to be closer than you realize for a stretch of the game, and then we'll see how the second half goes. But Eastern Michigan, 9-win team last season, mm-hmm. won their bowl game, tied for the most wins in program history last year. Chris Creighton's been there a long time. I believe it's his 10th year with the Eastern Michigan Eagles. Again, it feels like to me he's in kind of a spot where he needs to get out of there to take a Power 5 job because he's done so well. But it's also to the point where he hasn't won the MAC, mm-hmm. I don't believe. So you're in like that MAC purgatory where you're a really good MAC team, but you're mm-hmm. not winning the MAC. And that's obviously kind of what gets you more on the radar of these Power 5 teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a really good call out. He's been there a long time, but he's never been able to ascend to the top. They've been able to get to bowl games. I think last year was probably one of their best years. And they've found ways to beat Power 5 teams. But to your point, Ryan, this isn't an easy win. But in the same respect, it's a game you're expected to win, and you know how challenging those games can be. So we should transition and talk a little bit about injuries. You know, we've had some time since the breakdown to digest, get more information, etc. We still don't have a depth chart as far as I'm concerned, but that said, we do seem to trust the fact that we will be able to get injury reports 2 hours before the game. So we're not going to be able to include those on these episodes because we don't record a podcast 2 hours before the game. But we do do, we will continue to probably give you what Ryan Burns' anticipated depth chart. Is that what we're going to do?
Yeah, more or less. I think the injury report would be, I don't expect Darnell Jeffries to play at any point this season. Yep. He's going to be a rotational player from Minnesota at their three technique defensive line. Missed the game last week. Likely means you're going to continue to see a lot of Devin Eastern, the third-year kid from Shakopee, former four-star kid. You've also got Jalen Logan Redding, who will continue to slide down there like you saw against Nebraska. But I think the lone positive point, I would say, is from talking with Joe Rossi today, Minnesota's defensive coordinator, of which you can read all those quotes on Gopher Illustrated for free, and you should get behind the paywall for a dollar, help support me and what I do in trying to cover this team better than anybody else on the planet. But Rossi seemed to exude some optimism, I would say, that Cody Lindenberg is going to return this weekend. That's very important for this defense, as I think you would put him in that tier below Tyler Newbin in terms of talent right now. But he's in that same talent to me, tier talent, as Justin Wally. So he's their best linebacker. Being able to get his feet wet prior to North Carolina would be huge. The other question I get a lot this week, and I understand why I get it, is when is Chris Ottman-Bell going to start playing serious snaps? I don't know. I asked PJ about it on Monday. He gave me a non-answer, which is very apropos for PJ Fleck talking about injuries. He refuses to do it. But the sense I've gotten is I don't think he plays more than 5-10 snaps again here this weekend. Again, people, I don't know how much more clearly I can have tried to convey my thought process to you over the last few months, but we're still not even a year removed from Chris Ottman-Bell fully tearing his ACL, meniscus, I believe his MCL as well. I know everybody's used to seeing these Adrian Peterson type of ACL recoveries where they're back on the field and look superhuman in 9 months. These are still great, great athletes, but they're not the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. So for Chris Ottman-Bell, I'd be looking at probably by the end of the month, hopefully, is when – but it all comes down to how Chris's body feels. How does he continue to regain his explosiveness? How sore is he after he goes hard in a practice, they say. So Minnesota's still got depth there. They still have Corey Crooms and Elijah Spencer and Daniel Jackson and Mikey Brockington. But and those are the two ones I would note other than Darnell Jeffries. On the Eastern Michigan side of things – I'm going to throw my hands up in the air and say, I have no idea. We'll see. I mean, their kicker did not suit up on Saturday. Why that's important, we'll get to a little bit later. He was second team all MAC. But they got a tight end who went out of the game. But this is Eastern Michigan. You're not going to get any updates on their injuries because no one covers the freaking football team and goes to press conferences religiously. So the good news is Cody Lindenberg potentially back as soon as Saturday night, which obviously would be great news for Rossi's defense. I don't have a lot of optimism that Ottman-Bell is going to see a significant uptick in snaps as he continues to come back from that knee injury. And then Darnell Jeffries, I don't expect to see at any point this season.
All right. So let's talk about when the Gophers are on offense, Ryan. On the season, Eastern Michigan is giving up 398 yards of total offense. 194 of those are coming through the air. 204 are coming on the ground. Minnesota, conversely, is amassing 251 yards of total offense, 196 through the air, and 55 on the ground. Ultimately, you know, in terms of average points, it's one game again. Eastern Michigan is giving up 23 points a game, and Minnesota is scoring only 13 points a game. You know, again, sample sizes are really small here. It's hard to kind of glean anything from a sample size of one. But what do you expect, Ryan, that we'll be able to see at the 6:30 kickoff on BTN between the Eastern Michigan Eagles and your Minnesota Golden Gophers?
Yeah, this comes down to what do you think of Eastern Michigan's run defense to me? Because Howard is not a good football team. Howard's an FCS team that won 5 games last year. Peace and love to any Howard Bison fans out there, if you're listening to this podcast somehow. But they're not thought of to be a great FCS team. Yet last week, their running backs ran for 239 yards on 7.4 yards per carry.
Yeah.
And you kind of look back to what Eastern Michigan did in 2022. They won 9 games, having a very average, if not mediocre, run defense just in general. They allowed 4.3 yards per carry, third worst in the MAC. So I look at it from the Minnesota side of things and think, well, Minnesota last week was god-awful at running the football. They were incredibly inefficient, incredibly ineffective. Pick your adjective, I'd probably agree with it. So my bar to clear for this game, considering Howard ran for 7.4 yards per carry with the running backs last week, how's 4.5 yards per carry sound for Minnesota running backs? I just don't want to set the bar incredibly high, considering how inefficient it was last Thursday night. Now, Minnesota's got a game tape. They know what to prepare for in terms of a Eastern Michigan defense. They're going to be a 3-down front at times, meaning 3-down defensive linemen. They're going to be a 4-down lineman team at times, a.k.a. a 4-3, sometimes a 3-4 type of situation. They're going to try to throw different things at this offensive line. But why it's significant in terms of, you know, some other nuances with this, they lost the MAC Defensive Player of the Year to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when Jose Ramirez graduated and moved on to the NFL. He was a really good defensive lineman for them. They lost 3 of their top 5 tacklers in general from last season's defense. Their back 7 is their strength, led by a Boston College transfer by the name of, I'm going to get this wrong, Luke, just in your honor, Joe Sparaccio, something like that. Very solid linebacker. So their back 7 is good. But Minnesota, it's going to come down to, for me in this game, can Minnesota protect Ethan Calliope-Mandis? Can Minnesota establish the run? Can Minnesota figure out what life after Sean Tyler looks like? Can they have a run longer than 11 yards on the day? The statistics would tell me, Luke, that's probably going to be pretty probable here. But that's what I want to see from Minnesota's offense. They need to be a lot more efficient in games like these. And if they are efficient, I have skepticism that Eastern Michigan's offense on the flip side of things is going to be able to score enough points. But if Minnesota somehow gets upset in this game as a 20-point favorite, it's going to be because the Minnesota offense struggles to be efficient. They turn over the ball. So that's what I want to see from Greg Harbaugh, Ethan Calliope-Mandis from game 1 to game 2. Get this thing humming a lot more efficiently, generate some explosive plays, but it starts on the ground.
All right, and I do want to highlight, you said life after Sean Tyler. We're actually living in life of Sean Tyler right now, so I'm assuming you meant I'm going to butcher his name again.
You know what Sean Tyler is going to give you more or less. He's got enough of a sample size, both in the MAC and I think what they've seen in practice. Is Bryce Williams going to be your north-south guy? Not if he doesn't break another. I mean, he didn't break any tackles in game 1.
Right.
Now, again, limited sample size there. But are you going to give more carries in terms of Darius Taylor? I would imagine Darius Taylor is the one that gets that first look. So let me rephrase it, Luke. What does life beyond Sean Tyler in specifically the 2023 season in Minnesota's backfield look like? Because you need a complement to East-West Sean Tyler. You need to figure out who that North-South guy is.
Yeah, and I think going into this season, we were really curious to see what that breakdown in carries was going to be. No one expected Sean Tyler to carry the load, right? Just history has shown he doesn't carry the ball more than 15 times a game anyway. So ultimately, it's going to break down. It's going to be Zach Evans. It's going to be Darius Taylor. It's going to be Sean Tyler. It's going to be Bryce Williams, right? That's the thing that we don't have fleshed out. And I think you alluded to this in the breakdown, if memory serves, that they went with the more experienced or known thing. At least that's what proved.
Yeah. That on Monday.
Oh, he did. Okay. Sure.
Go with Bryce Williams because he was the veteran back and they didn't know what they were going to face.
Yeah.
Now you're going to have more of an idea of what you're going to face.
Yep.
So I would imagine that this would lead me to the logical conclusion that Minnesota maybe plays more than two running backs on Saturday.
And I would assume too, Ryan, that Bryce Williams, whatever your opinion is of him, will still have a role, especially on like long third passing third downs. Yes. Where you know you're going to throw and you're probably going to have to pass protect. And it's a very given that you're going to throw the ball. I bet we continue to see him. So, okay. Yeah. And then ultimately, I think we have to measure, Ryan, just on offense. What are we going to deem a successful game from the Gophers, right? 13 points, the win against a conference opponent, especially in your division, is really important. But let's try and set an expectation of what's going to be considered a successful game from this offense.
Well, I would tell you Vegas essentially is projecting their win total somewhere around, or their point total, I should say, somewhere around 30, 34 points in this game. Mm-hmm. It's a 20-point spread, over under 48. So Vegas thinks somewhere around 34 to 14. Mm-hmm. I would say if they score more than 28 points, I'd be pretty happy with that. But I know that some people are going to say it's a MAC team. What sure. are you talking about? It should be 35. They should score 400. My Gophers back in the 1940. Okay. All right.
So yeah. Here's the thing, Ryan. Take your
fifth at this guy. But I think 28 points, I don't know, 420 total yards, which nice number there.
I don't know how I got that. I guess for me, it's not even points, right? I think for me to consider this a successful week is you average more than 4 yards a carry, right?
Sure.
So you double the production. You have at least 8 explosive plays, right?
What do you deem an explosive play?
15 yards or greater.
Okay. I view it as 20 to 25, and I was about to say, if there's 8 of those, Minnesota for sure is going to score 30 points.
Yeah. No, I think if you have 8, we should probably agree on what we define as an explosive play using going forward.
Not explosive enough for me, especially in this day and age of college football. I would say either 20 or 25.
Okay, I'm going to look at the definitions around some advanced analytics sites and see if we can find some consensus, cuz I want to use this consistently going forward. But yeah, we need to see more explosion, right? And some of that you got to give Nebraska credit, but some measure of explosive plays for me as well. They got a couple, but they were just kind of towards the end of the game. It was just kind of dink and dunk throughout the first half, and especially into the early part of the fourth quarter. So ultimately, they got to be able to run the ball, and they got to be able to throw the ball with some explosiveness. But you can get explosive plays in the run game as well. So I'm not gonna be too picky. I just want to see some more explosion.
Well, we both agree on three things or three words with this offense. What deems a success for Minnesota's offense on Saturday other than just winning the football game? Explosive, efficient, and effective. More than they were last week against Nebraska.
Home Field Apparel at homefieldapparel.com brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, people can save 15% on their first order with the promo code GG23. You and I both have a bunch of this apparel. We absolutely love it. The fit, the feel, but also those retro designs.
Retro designs that'll get you noticed. I ran into some people before the game that were wearing Home Field Apparel. I said, "Hey, where'd you get that?" And they actually got it from listening to this podcast. So again, promo code GG23 at checkout. Get 15% off your first order. Incredibly comfortable shirts that your spouse will steal and wear to bed. Colors of and different unique designs from across the board. So if Minnesota's your favorite team, whoever it may be, they've got sweatpants, sweatshirts, crew necks, whatever it may be. So if you want to be styling at your next Gopher event or whatever it may be, go to homefieldapparel.com. And when you check out, use the promo code GG23 to save 15% off.
Ryan, when the Gophers are on defense, the Eagles are averaging about, let's see here, they're averaging 285 yards of total offense, 175 through the air, as well as 110 on the ground. The Gophers, conversely, are giving up 295 yards of total offense, 114 through the air and 181 on the ground. The Gophers have only given up 10 points on the season, whereas Eastern Michigan has amassed 33 on the season against Howard. Again, small sample size, Ryan. And we should also note that offensively, this is a bit skewed in terms of the score because of their success on special teams. So, what should we expect from this Eastern Michigan Eagles offense against the Gophers on Saturday?
Well, I would say if you want to look at the most recent five games, and I understand four of them happened last year, but Eastern Michigan has scored 31 or more points in each of their last five games. And to the shock of absolutely no one, when you score 31 or more points in your last five games, you'll probably have won them, which they have. They're on a nice little winning streak coming into this game. Now, the thing to know here is 30 points scored in the first half against Howard, 3 points in the second half against Howard. Again, I don't think Howard's a juggernaut. I think Joe Rossi has at least gotten a little bit of tape in terms of what they want this Eastern Michigan 2023 offense to be. But if I want to keep it incredibly simple, if they stop all Mac tailback Samson Evans, they're going to win the football game. The Iowa transfer has run for 29 touchdowns and 1,500 yards since transferring there. But here's as simple as I can make it. When Eastern Michigan has won their last, I think now 10 games, Samson Evans is averaging over 110 yards on the ground. In their last four losses, he's averaging somewhere around 40 to 45 yards. Stop Samson Evans, win football games, especially if they're going to, you know, their quarterback is okay. I mean, and he's a guy by the name of Austin Smith. He's got five real games of significant snaps under his belt. In those contests, he's completing 52% of his passes with 6 passing touchdowns and 5 interceptions. He's also a guy that in those starts can run for a first down. He's got 18 first downs with his legs in his career. But essentially, Luke, if you stop Samson Evans, stop the run, and you make Austin Smith beat you with his arm, usually good things are going to happen for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we noted, you know, there was a lot of success for Eastern Michigan on special teams, and that definitely contributed to their point total. I think they had 2 return touchdowns, Ryan, from the previous game. So that accounted for 14 points. Joe Rossi's defense, as you have pointed out, how many games now in a row that it's been under 20 points?
Their last 7 contests, they have not allowed an opposing offense to score more than 20 points.
All right. So I think that's something to continue to look at. I like the call out there in terms of the number of games in a row that they've scored at least 30 points. That's interesting. And it'll be something to watch. Ultimately, too, one thing we talked about in the breakdown was the Gopher special teams did their defense no service in terms of field position, with the exception of pinning Nebraska down at the 1, which was largely benefited by an incredible hop there at about the 19 or 20 yard line. I'm curious, Ryan, you know, in conjunction with defense, Gopher special teams is going to have to play a big part, and we know how much they struggled. I think we have to highlight this is part of the defensive segment. You know, like what does the Gopher special teams have to do here to make sure that, you know, they put this team in a position to actually have success and win this ball game on Saturday?
Not screw the pooch. I mean, if we're going to be quite honest here, you'll hear it in the keys of the game, because I'm tired of talking about it. You're tired of listening to it. But on paper, this is a clear advantage for Eastern Michigan. They return an all-MAC kicker in Jesus Gomez, or Jesus Gomez, I should say. Their punter, Mitchell Tomasek, was first-team all-MAC last year. They had 2 kickoff return touchdowns last week. They had another kickoff return touchdown in 2022. Clearly, part of the success of why Eastern Michigan wins so many football games year after year is their special teams. And then you've got Minnesota, who the only thing I feel confident each and every week is a net positive is Dragan Kesic. Whether it's kickoffs, whether it's field goals, I feel confident enough to list him, the reigning special teams player of the week, as a net positive for Minnesota. But look at everything else. I'll get to it a little bit later in the keys to the game. I just have such an incredibly low bar. You know this. I'm tired of saying this. But how does Minnesota potentially lose this football game? Special teams will very likely be a part of that if that's the case.
Mm-hmm. And again, this Gopher defense against Nebraska was very opportunistic and forced turnovers. I'm curious to see if we can see this as a trend, not only on the turnover department, but also, you know, getting pressure on the quarterback, forcing tackles for loss and sacks. What'll be something you'll be looking out for there, Ryan?
Well, Joe Rossi talked about it today when I asked him about what'd you think of your pass rushing game one, and he goes, it was better, which is what we wanted to see. But he's like, he made this big point of hidden turnovers. And what he means by that is you look at the turnovers that Minnesota had on Thursday night. First one, the Tyler Newbin interception. Well, why did it happen? Because Kyler Baugh had pressure right in Jeff Sims' face, forced an errant throw. Tyler Newbin was there to secure it. Why did Tyler Newbin get a second interception? Joe Rossi threw a blitz, had pressure in the face of Jeff Sims, threw off his back foot, errant throw. If you just give yourself a chance to generate more pressure around a quarterback, the likelihood goes up significantly or exponentially that you're going to be able to force a turnover, especially with a secondary that includes Justin Wally, Tyler Newbin, among others. So that's going to be one of the things in this game I want to see is if and when Minnesota is able to stop the run, how many opportunistic plays can they get? Because Austin Smith, the quarterback, is liable, as we'll get to a little bit later. When he's under pressure, he is very mediocre at throwing the football. And I'll get you those stats here in a bit. But generating pressure and stopping the run are going to be two hallmarks to this game if Minnesota is going to walk away with a victory.
Ryan, I imagine the majority of our listeners are probably using in-ear headphones, right? So oftentimes they are referred to as earbuds. I recently, like you, have been starting to use an earbud tip. These are foam tips made by Comply at complyfoam.com. Ryan, it's changed the game for me. The noise isolation is better, the comfort is better, etc. I can't speak more highly of these earbud tips.
I mean, that's a statement in itself, considering how much you spend with those AirPods in your ear. Now, this is a local company from Oakdale, Minnesota. complyfoam.com is what we're talking about. Luke's testimonial is true, but so is mine, in that I didn't know that my earbuds weren't supposed to hurt my ear. The ones I got from Beats, I have Beats Pros. Luke's got Apple AirPods. They hurt my ear. They never stayed in correctly. And so when I got these memory foam tips from Comply, I put them on. They were super simple to obviously install. And then I wore them as I mowed the lawn, did some stuff outside, and then I took them out. And I was like, I never had to once readjust them in my ear. And my ear doesn't hurt me when I take these out. So again, we've all invested in these nice earbuds, whether they're Apple, whether they're Beats, or whether, you know, you can go down the list, Google, Samsung, Sony, whatever it may be. So what we implore you to do, support a local company at complyfoam.com. You get 20% off your first order of these earbuds with promo code GG23 at checkout. You've invested in your earbuds. Now make sure you got good ones at complyfoam.com.
Now it's time for our facts and figures for this game. This game will be a 6:30 kick on the 9th of September on BTN, Ryan. One thing that we should note here, obviously Gopher football has a number of alumni, and there will actually be an alumni that is a color commentator for the first time, Ryan. Your very own good buddy, probably rival from across the conference, Tommy Olson.
Childhood rival. He was Matamidi. I was Tartan/Oakdale. Tommy Olson, the pride of the Northeast side, gets his first shot on BTN. So we're pulling for Tommy. I know I talked to him in the press box last week. He's excited about the opportunity. So for those of you watching this game at home and thinking to yourself, that voice sounds familiar. Yes, that indeed is Tommy Olson on the airwaves.
All right. So if we're looking at the game on Saturday, it does look like there might be a chance of precipitation. We'll see if that actually comes to be. But kickoff, temperature should be right around 70-ish degrees. The wind, it might be a little bit of a factor, but not too much.
Essentially, the weather looks fine. I think there's a chance of rain potentially. It's in the 70s. I think light and variable winds. All depends upon if there's that rain shower kind of gets into it. Now, as we record this, we're more than 48 hours out.
Yep.
And as someone who spends a lot of time in the fall looking at weather reports, they're not usually accurate. Probably till about 24, maybe 12, maybe 6, maybe 3. And that's even maybe it then if they're going to be accurate. But essentially, it should be a very comfortable night at Huntington Bank Stadium.
Yeah, it's very likely that you'll enjoy your tailgate. You might get a little bit of rain, so maybe prepare appropriately. It won't get terribly cold. So if we're looking at this game from a betting perspective, Ryan, again, Minnesota is a favorite at a 20.5-point spread as I look at this now. And then the over-under is 48. Going back to our specific stats on the season, I do need to look at that. So you, Ryan, currently against the spread, you're 1-0. I'm 0-1. And then on the over-under, you're 1-0. I'm 0-1. I'll remind you that you picked 23-17, which was both an under and a cover.
Nebraska.
So you did quite well there. We'll get back into this when we get to your prediction. But give us your keys to the game here as we go into this second home game for your Golden Gophers.
My key to the game for the Gopher offense is one we've already spent a lot of time talking about, and that's getting an efficient and effective running game established. Because if you're a fan listening to this, you know how discombobulated the running game looked last week against Nebraska. Minnesota tailbacks ran for a total of 58 rushing yards on 17 carries, and they only forced 3 missed tackles. That's just flat out not going to get it done, especially against a quality opponent. Now, you can look at last week's performance and say Minnesota really didn't know what to prepare for with the Huskers' version of their defense, which is true. This is their first time putting that version of it on tape. You could also look in the direction of the offensive line that was breaking in 3 brand new starters, and they certainly didn't give their tailbacks a ton to work with, as only one of their starters in left tackle Ariante Ursary graded above a 62 on the Pro Football Focus run blocking scale. Now, a 60.0 is dead average, so think of it as a C. Minnesota had one offensive lineman grade out with a run blocking game grade above a C. It's not going to get it done. The Minnesota moving company up front needs to be better. They didn't meet the standard last week. But when you look at Eastern Michigan's run defense last season, with a larger sample size, which is why I'm going with that, they were very average, if not mediocre. I mentioned it earlier. They averaged 4.3 yards per carry against them. That was third worst in the MAC. And they allowed, just in general, 156 yards per game on the ground. But this is a different season and team for head coach Chris Creighton. Now, in week one against that FCS opponent in Howard, the Eagles allowed non-quarterbacks for Howard to rush for 239 yards on 32 carries. That is a balmy 7.46 yards per carry allowed. How does something like that happen? Well, that's what happens when you lose the MAC Player of the Year on defense and D-tackle Jose Ramirez, who's now in the NFL. But just in general, they graduated three of their top five tacklers from last season. It's a revamped defensive line to go with a secondary that all returns and a couple of linebackers that are pretty good. So what is the bar to clear for the Gopher offense, specifically the running offense on Saturday night? I want to see these tailbacks average over 4.5 yards per carry. That's it. I know that Howard ran for over 7 yards a carry. And if you want to say Minnesota should average that, you do you. I'm not going to tell you otherwise. But Minnesota's got a game tape just like Eastern Michigan does. But this is on the offensive line. I want to see more from them. I want to see if we see more freshman Darius Taylor, potentially Zach Evans, as we figure out who the right complement is to Sean Tyler. But Greg Harbaugh's offense, just in general, has to be more efficient, more explosive, and more effective, especially on early downs. That's one of the barometers I want folks to keep an eye on, is Minnesota had 17 third downs last week. The average distance to go on those 17 third downs was nearly 8 yards per third down. That's bad. Get in more second and third manageable, and this game could potentially be over early, but it starts with the running game. You got to get that going early and often on Saturday night. My defensive key to the game is don't let Samson Evans beat you. Eastern Michigan has scored 31 or more points in each of their last five contests. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that any of those were against Power 5 opponents, but this is a team that has had recent success putting up points. Now, if that trend is going to continue against Minnesota, meet all MAC running back Samson Evans. Since 2021, the Iowa transfer has run for 29 touchdowns and over 1,500 rushing yards. You can see he's very prolific near the stripe, has a nose for finding the end zone. I'd be remiss if I also didn't mention he had 45 missed tackles forced last season. That was the fourth best in the MAC. In his 731 yards after contact were third best in the MAC. In his career, 64% of his rushing yards have come after first contact. I'm not telling you this is who he reminds me of, but this is who he reminds me of. He's a poor man's Muhammad Ibrahim to an extent. He's bigger than Mo, but he's, in terms of running style, very similar. He's not a burner, more of a grinder that is really good at making that first man miss. He's not someone that they're going to feature in the passing game too often. He's got 41 career catches in 31 games. But I mentioned this stat earlier, and this is the important one to me. The easy barometer for this game to know if Minnesota's got a pretty good shot at winning, the four games that Eastern Michigan lost last season, Samson Evans ran for an average of 40 yards per game. In their nine wins last season, Samson Evans ran for 111 yards per game. Seems pretty clear to me that if he gets over 100 yards, the chances of Minnesota winning a football game, not too great. So you want to limit him on the ground because Austin Smith, their quarterback, has got five games of significant experience under his belt, completing about 53% of his passes, six passing touchdowns, five interceptions. Why this is important: if you can stop Evans on early downs and make Austin Smith beat you, if you can get pressure on him, he has been really bad in his short career. Per Pro Football Focus, when Smith has been quote-unquote under pressure, he's only completing 41% of his passes with four picks with one touchdown. Finally is the one I lament the most, just like you, the listener, do, just like Luke Viewer does as well. For the love of all that is holy, Gopher special teams just need to be consistent for 60 minutes. I'm tired of talking about it. You're tired of reading it. You're tired of listening to it. But here we are for what feels like the seventh consecutive season. I'm rubbing my brow, rubbing this giant forehead of mine as Gopher special teams continue to be a net negative more than a positive. I've talked them up already. The reigning special teams player of the week in the Big Ten, Dragan Kesich, is the only one I feel like is a net positive right now for this special teams unit, whether that's with his leg on kickoff or whether that's with his leg just in general. Because on paper, Eastern Michigan has a clear advantage here on special teams. They return their all-MAC kicker in Jesus Gomez. They got their first-team all-MAC punter returning. And Mark Crawford, too, and I'll give him credit, Luke. The first punt of the season for him, absolutely elite. Pins him at the 152-yarder. The issue is the other three punts from Thursday night had a net of 38 yards and none of them were inside the 20. That's bad. I also look at Eastern Michigan's return game and I am sitting here with envy because they had two kickoff return touchdowns last week, had another return touchdown last season. In comparison, the Gophers' last kickoff return touchdown was November of 2017. They have returned 113 kickoffs since then. I'll remind you, Minnesota gave up a 63-yard kick return last week, but in my eyes, I view this as Dragan Kesich is going to kick the ball 5 yards deep into the end zone every time. It's going to be mitigated. Minnesota committed three penalties last week, Luke. Two of them were on special teams. An illegal formation on a punt in year 7 of the same coordinator, year 3 of the same punter, year 4 of the same long snapper is inexcusable. You also have a roughing the punter, which gives them an automatic first down on 4th and 22. That can't happen. So I'm going to say this for the umpteenth time, people. My bar to clear for Gopher special teams is so incredibly low. All I want for them to be is average and consistent. So here's my ask for Saturday night. Luke, you tell me if this is demanding too much out of a year seven coordinator and a lot of returning guys. No penalties, no long returns, don't lose an average of 6 yards per field position on every kickoff, and let's see if that net punt yards can be somewhere around 43. I feel like that's not a big ask, Luke, but here we are. I'm telling you, on paper, this is an area Eastern Michigan's got an advantage. For the love of all that is holy, sweet giblets and juniper, whatever you want to say, just be okay and Minnesota wins this football game.
I really want you to come up with like a report card on all those metrics for every game, right? You have this templated out, right? All you have to do is copy it, add an emoji, like a check mark yes, or like a red X no, right? And go for special teams.
I want to say again, Luke, there's nothing I would enjoy more than on Sunday when we record next to come on here and say, what a great job by Rob Wenger. And Quentin Redding had a kickoff return touchdown. They blocked the kick. But it's just like, as I mentioned, they have returned 113 kickoffs since their last kickoff return touchdown. It is so remarkable to me. It's like the stat that keeps on giving. So I hope that special teams changes their best, but I don't have a lot of hopes, Luke.
All right. Anything else you want to get to before the prediction part of this game?
No, I'm ready to show you. I want to hear you go first. I already got my prediction locked in, but I want to continue to be good against the spread and good against the over-under.
All right, so the Gophers, again, are a 20.5 favorite. The over-under is 48. In the preseason, Ryan predicted this game to be 31-17. I had predicted 38-21. Again, neither of our predictions in the first game were remotely close. Technically, Ryan, you did get the over under correct and the spread.
Always blessed, never stressed, Luke.
Yeah, always blessed, never stressed. but I will take. So real quick, your observation on the rushing yardage. I did think that was a good point. I think if they get over 100 yards, the Gophers have a chance. Ultimately, though, I hope that the Minnesota offense puts us in a situation where Eastern Michigan has to throw the ball, right? They don't really have the luxury of being able to control the ball and run it at their convenience. Ultimately, too, I do think that the Gophers have shown in the past that, you know, you can have a high powered rushing attack, but they'll find a way to keep that in check enough, right? You think of some of the Wisconsin wins where Braylon Allen has been, you know, incredible, and then he looks very pedestrian against the Gophers. I'm hopeful that that trend continues for this Gopher offense for this Gopher defense. And credit Joe Rossi for all that. I am going to take the Gophers with the victory here. I'm going to go 28-10, Ryan. So that will be an under and a Eastern Michigan cover.
You're the worst. You'll understand why I say that in a second. So I have a lot of respect for Chris Creighton and what he's done at Eastern Michigan. He's built them into a team that's very Jerry Kill-esque in what he did at Northern Illinois. They're well coached. They play hard. They're disciplined. Why I have my doubts that the Eagles can pull a Bowling Green here is this. Their run defense is bad, or at least it's been very mediocre, pedestrian, whatever adjective you want to use. And if they have to start committing more guys into the box to stop the run, that means one-on-one matchups for Daniel Jackson, Corey Crooms, Brevin Spanford, name your XYZ pass catcher if you'd like. And if Minnesota can stop the run like they've done for most of the Joe Rossi tenure, I'm skeptical that Eastern Michigan quarterback Austin Smith's passing abilities are good enough to move the ball consistently before turning it over. I think the game's close. Minnesota pulls away in the second half for a 3-score win. I've got Minnesota 30, Eastern Michigan 10. So that is an easy under. That is a slight Eastern Michigan cover. I mean, the funny part here, Luke, would be if they go, say, 31-10, which I'm almost.
So you took 30-10, right?
I did. So I got an Eastern Michigan cover and an under.
Gosh.
So we both agree on how we see this game in terms of a heavy under. I think I'm 8 points under the under. You're 10-ish. more or less.
Yeah, more or less 10. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, I think we see it pretty similar, but it comes down to, can Minnesota special teams get out of their own way? Can Minnesota's offense find efficiency, explosiveness, and be effective in general? Because if you score 20 points in this game, I don't see a way Eastern Michigan scores that many points unless it's turnovers, unless it's, you know, something crazy like that.
The Burns Insurance Agency has been a longtime supporter of Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, it should be no new news to a listener that your dad, Bill Burns, shops and gives you the best service possible.
And it's not just getting a birthday present for himself, which he's notorious for. It's getting the best possible price and the best possible coverage for you. I'm tired of telling you guys this, but I'll tell you again. It's not just random people out there. These are real people like you and me. He just saved somebody $911 when they switched their home and their auto to him. And every single year, when you come up for renewal with whatever policy it is, they always look to make sure you got the best price and the best coverage today. So if you think you're paying too much for your home, auto, commercial, boat, whatever it may be, and you want to have a Gopher fan give you a free quote to check them out, give him an email at bill@insurancebyburns.com or check them out online at insurancebyburns.com.
Okay, let's take a look around the Big Ten. I know, Ryan, we didn't get a chance to break down some of these games. Some of them we might get into from the previous week as we preview the upcoming games. Some comments there. But in terms of like who had quality wins last week, maybe, you know, do you follow Kelly Ford at all?
A little bit.
Yeah, so he has like a most deserving kind of rankings, and those usually come out on Mondays for those people. But if you look across the most deserving, like top 30, Ohio State got the most deserving win, followed by Penn State and then Minnesota at 10, 11, and 12, respectively. And then Illinois got in there as well as Rutgers. You'll notice kind of a common theme, strong teams or power five teams, Illinois, you know, knocking off Toledo, who's likely to win the MAC, right? I don't think
they're a very good MAC team.
Yeah, yes. Right. And frankly, like late in that game, it kind of looked in doubt that they would even win that game. So yeah, we can preview that game. Actually, that's on ESPN2. Illinois takes on Kansas. This probably is one of the most anticipated games. I will note this is they're two Friday games this week. I agree with Tom Allen, who said Fridays are reserved for high school football. I still don't quite understand this, but here we are. This Illinois game, this Illinois Kansas game will be on ESPN2 at 6:30. And the over under for this game is 58, Ryan, with Kansas favored by 3.
Yeah, they see this thing somewhere around 31 to 28, which This might be the best Big Ten West non-conference game. It's up there probably for at least non-conference games in the Big Ten West. I'd say top five, because there'll be some other ones we'll get to in this that are in terms of intrigue, in terms of quality of game. Kansas is going to get their stud quarterback back for this game. I saw he was cleared earlier this week. And then it comes down to, what do you think of the Illinois defense, who just allowed a lot of points to Toledo?
Mm-hmm. Now,
the question is that we're all going to learn this week, and I stress to each one of you listeners, the jump from week one to week two, I think, is going to be significant for some teams. We're going to see what's a trend, what was a mirage. But this should be a great game on Friday night. I know there's going to be a lot of you that will be at your local Friday night football games. But if you're home, 6:30 ESPN2, we're going to find out a lot about what Brett Bielema's team is made of as they got to travel to Lawrence.
Yeah, it'll be a hot game too. Looks like the weather should be in the 90s. It'll be an interesting test. Illinois is definitely not doing themselves any favors in the scheduling department, but I think in some ways, if they can pull these two out, their resume will look really good to start the season. Another Friday night game is Indiana State against Indiana. That'll be at Indiana, 6 p.m. on BTN. I think there is no line because Indiana State is an FCS school. you know, your get-in price is $14 there in Bloomington. You know, you and I have a bet on Tom Allen. You know, they looked okay at times against Ohio State. I know a lot of people have questions, but I guess the real question is Indiana better or is Ohio State worse?
I think both can be true, but for the specifics of this game, Indiana State may be one of the worst teams in the FCS. They just lost last week 27-0 to Eastern Illinois. Now they have to face Indiana. If Tom Allen doesn't win this game by 30 points at home, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I know I got a little bit of skin in the game here, but yeah. Indiana State is truly dreadful, just truly dreadful. This is a game where Indiana should win this game 42-7.
All right, and then Ohio State will take on Youngstown State. Again, there's no line for this. This is one of the first Saturday games in the 11 o'clock time slot. This will be on BTN. Again, it's amazing to me. I thought one of my cousins put it best. Only Ohio State can find a way to complain when they win games, right? And they were complaining about that Indiana win, that they didn't look great. You know, McCord ended up being 20 of 33 for 239 yards and a pick, but in the end, nobody seemed happy if they're Ohio State. I imagine this will be a get-right game for them against Youngstown State where you'll see some explosive plays in that passing game.
I mean, I think they're just going to establish the run the whole game. I think you're going to see a lot of Travion Henderson. I think you're going to see a lot of Mayan Williams. Yes, they'll get some explosives in the passing game. But against a team like Youngstown State, what do you really need to show? I know the Buckeye faithful are not content with a win at times. But yeah, I mean, you want to see more from Kyle McCord in game one to game two, but I would expect a heavy dose of Mayan and Travion.
All right, so then your Peacock game of the week here, Ryan, is Delaware traveling to Penn State, number 7 Penn State, who actually looked pretty good in that first Sunday night game on NBC against against West Virginia. I did see a tweet somewhere. I didn't pull it up. I should have written this down, though, that Peacock had somewhere around 3.5 million people watching that first game. I believe it was Michigan that was the Peacock game of the week last week. Let me just look that up. Yeah, so that was fairly confident of this. I'm pretty confident that was the Michigan game against East Carolina. Yep, it was. Ultimately though, Ryan, it will be interesting to see, Delaware take on Penn State. But again, this is another game that does not have a line due to FCS.
Delaware won their first game, which is great. Shout out to the CAA. Shout out to the FCS. They beat Stony Brook by 24. But I tried to tell you before the year, I'm not going to take victory laps until November, but I think Penn State might be finally getting up into the tier of the Michigan and Ohio States. We'll see if that plays out here. There's obviously still a lot left to play, but I would imagine that James Franklin is just going to do like I expect Ohio State to do, not show a whole lot and run the crap out of the football. Maybe Trey Potts gets his first touchdown here.
Yeah, I think he ended up having like 5 carries, 8 yards, nothing. Didn't really burn.
5 carries for 6 yards.
Yeah, nothing great. I didn't get to see him carry the ball. The few times I did flip over and see it, though, it really looked like that defense was flying around again for Manny Diaz. They looked really, really fast. Yes. Okay, so let's get into, I think this is the big noon game of the week, Nebraska at number 22, Colorado. I honestly don't know what to think of this game, Ryan. Obviously, you know, Colorado has made a big turnaround after getting absolutely slobber knocked by the Gophers last year at home. And Deion's taken what, 85 new players or something, some crazy number, right? But the thing that's interesting to me is that, you know, they're looked at as making this massive turnaround. How good is this Colorado team? Hard to say. How good was that TCU team? Hard to say. Sample size is pretty small, so let's not draw too many conclusions. What we saw against Minnesota in Nebraska is that defense looked decent. I think the question is, can they find a way to not shoot themselves in the foot, because they can also run the ball. Again, we don't know a ton about Minnesota or Nebraska because, again, the sample size is small. But in this Colorado-Nebraska game where the over-under is 59 59.5 with Colorado being a 3-point favorite. This is basically a pick 'em, Ryan.
It is. I think Colorado wins this game somewhere around 31-28. I wouldn't be shocked at all to see Nebraska win this football game.
No, me neither.
Like, I understand Colorado is the talk of the town, as they should be. That was a really exciting game for them against TCU. You got to see the Shohei Ohtani of college football and Travis Hunter go out there and play 129 snaps, which is just insane for what he was able to do on offense and defense. But I have a lot of respect for Matt Rhule and his staff. And I think that, I mean, I wonder if Colorado's feeling it in their oats a little bit, and they're now ranked as the number 22 team in the country. I would still be very surprised if they win more than 7 games this year. And that kind of puts them in line with what expectations are for Nebraska. So, I mean, I'll flat out come out and say it. I think Nebraska finds a way to win this football game because Colorado's defense is so bad that I wonder if they just run the crap out of Jeff Sims, try to ball control, keep the ball away from Shedeur Sanders, keep it away from Travis Hunter, prove that you can stop an actual team with a pulse. So I'm going to come out and say it. I think Nebraska wins this football game.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that's actually that crazy, especially if Nebraska doesn't turn over the ball. They had solid special teams. Their defense looked good, right? And ultimately, it was turnovers that did them in and their inability to really throw the ball. But if they're willing to run Jeff Sims as much as they ran him against the Gophers, like, I do think that there's a drastic style difference between what TCU is trying to do versus what Nebraska is trying to do. And I do think that the defense is maybe better. But again, the one thing that
this is a game where I'm actually going to get to watch it. It'll be on Fox 11 a.m. Yeah. Minnesota's kick at 6:30. I'm excited to see what it looks like on both sides.
Yeah. I will mention too, I think one of the reasons that obviously there's the Deion factor, and have I ever given you my complaint about his whole prime thing?
No, but you, I guess, here's the floor.
I hate the fact that it's prime and with his number 21, and the number 21 isn't actually prime. That actually, as someone who
that's
is
such someone who threw Calc 4, Luke, I get it, but that's among the dirtiest things you've ever said.
Oh, it just bugs me. Like, it's not a prime number. Like, come on, you're trying too hard. I get it's your number, but you also wore number 2. You know, that just bugs me. All right, but I will say the TCU Colorado game was one of the cleanest played games, actually seemed to have a flow and a rhythm, right? And it was aesthetically pleasing. I think that's in some reason why it's getting a lot of attention. There were so many games that just were tough to watch and were like first week games last week. Okay, so let's talk about the final. It'll be the final 11 o'clock game on ESPN2. This is Purdue traveling to Virginia Tech. They will get to experience Sandman as they wait for Virginia Tech to come out, one of the greatest entrances in college football. This game is an over under a 49 with Va Tech, a 3-point favorite.
I see 46, so something around 24-21, but even still. It's a gut check game for Purdue, coming off a tough loss to Fresno State at home. Fresno State, a very good football team. I hope that point got across to people. And now Daniel House, our favorite guest, owes me a coffee because he took the over on Purdue non-conference wins with me. But that's a here, just here nor there. But I want to see how that team kind of responds. How does Hudson Card respond? How does defensively, how do they respond? Because Virginia Tech obviously has a pulse. They're a Power 5 football team. They're a team that is 1-0. They beat Old Dominion by 19 last week. This is a game that Purdue absolutely can win, but how do they handle the road environment in their first road game under Ryan Walters?
All right, and the first and the kind of the primetime middle slot game on CBS will feature number 2 Michigan against the UNLV Rebels. The over-under is 58 with a line of 36. Michigan was able to win their first game against East Carolina. And frankly, Ryan, they did it in kind of a succinct fashion. They didn't show a lot, but ultimately, I imagine most Michigan fans would have liked to see more than 30 points. But, you know, their defense did them right. Ultimately, this game is a 58 over under with 36.5 spread. They're expecting this to be another wallop for them. I'd be curious to see what it looks like with yet another interim head coach.
I'm so uninterested in this game. I cannot stress to you how much I don't care about a 37-point home favorite for Michigan. The game's not going to be aesthetically pleasing. I just want to see if J.J. McCarthy continues to look as good as what he has.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a kid, highly touted, top 100 overall prospect coming out of his graduating class. He looked the part last week, man. Again, I know that UNLV isn't exactly the barometer here, but I want to see if J.J. McCarthy can put it together in two straight weeks.
Okay, the other kind of primetime game on Fox at 2:30 is the Better Bowl, brought to you by DraftKings and DraftDuel and, you know, any other betting website you can think of. Sorry.
Game of the week,
the betting,
sponsored by...
I don't know if there'll be a lot of money. I don't know if there'll be a lot of money put on this game by bettors, but it might be a lot of money put on by athletes. Okay, bettors? Bad joke. Okay,
Arlen Bruce.
Yeah, I'm
Noah Shannon.
My bad. Going? That's a lot of hate. These guys don't deserve that. But you know,
don't be a moron and bet on college sports, especially your own games.
There you go.
I have no sympathy for that.
This features the Iowa Hawkeyes. Traveling to Iowa State to travel the Cyclones. They'll play for the Cy-Hawk Trophy. The only thing I have to say about last week for Iowa, I get that they started hot. They always start hot. But ultimately, it was 24 points. We're tracking how many points Brian Ferentz gets. The memes and the social media.
Price is Right. Type of the yodel thing that they used to do.
Yes. Oh my goodness. So good. Some of the bits were so good. I started following Twitter accounts just based on some of the bits they came out with. So good. And the thing is when you put that into the contract, you had to know it was coming. Beth Getz, you can make this right. We know you can. Next contract iteration.
I'm surprised that this line is only Iowa -4 because this is not a good Iowa State team.
No, I'm surprised as well. But, Iowa tends to struggle in the early non-conference slate, right? But then they come together as a team and they just look really good. Late in the season, in November, etc. I'm curious, but Kirk Ferentz has had Iowa State's number for years. I love Kirk Ferentz. I'm going to admit it. The man has some great one-liners. Did you get his one-liner this week?
No.
So apparently, former President Donald Trump will be there, and he was asked about it, and he said something to the extent of, I don't have the exact quote up. But he goes, good, there'll be 60,000 other people at the game too.
Such a Ferentz quote.
Such a great Ferentz quote. He is so good at quotes. And I love the timeouts thing with PJ. Oh, I thought that was so good and petty. I was so there for it. Okay. The other 2:30 game on BTN.
Here's what I will say about Iowa.
Okay.
We didn't get to talk about it.
Sure.
Is can they run the football? Because they couldn't run the football against a bad Utah State team last week. Caleb Johnson averaged,
and that was a problem last year.
Yards per carry.
Yeah.
LeSean Williams didn't average anything. Patterson, their other running back, didn't average anything. I heard all offseason from the people from the South how this revamped offensive line was going to be the bee's knees, and then you run for 88 total yards against Utah State.
Yeah.
So Iowa State's defense will be better than that, but can you run the football is what I want to see from Iowa.
All right, one of the BTN games at 2:30 will feature Michigan State playing host to the Richmond Spiders. Richmond coming into this game 0-1. They lost to Morgan 17-10. There is no line on this. Again, another FCS Power 5 game. Michigan State, though, got a win 31-7 against Central Michigan. I think that score is a little deceiving in terms of how the game played out. I got to watch a little bit of that game. Noah Kim, quarterback, he can definitely spin it a little bit. But, they're definitely missing some of those playmakers. I just don't know what to think of Michigan State. I think they're going to be better than last year. But in the end, I just don't know if they have enough.
This is going to be another boring game because Richmond's awful. They're a terrible MEAC team. I mean, it's going to be a game where... their running back, I'm trying to think of his name. I think it's Nathan Carter, is going to run for over 100 yards, probably 3-4 touchdowns. It's not going to be interesting to me. The final one that I'm actually interested in is the Sickos game of the week as UTEP travels to Ryan Field. UTEP is 1-1. They lost to Jacksonville State and just beat Incarnate Word.
Yes.
And they are a 1.5-point favorite against a absolutely dreadful Northwestern team last week.
Over-under is 38.5. This will be Northwestern's first home game.
They're thinking like a 20-17 type of victory for UTEP, which I will remind people again, UTEP stinks.
Yeah. One thing I found interesting, Ryan, if you look at ESPN's, you know, FPI, right, they have Northwestern winning this game 80% of the time, whereas they're currently not favored in Vegas. Additionally, while I was doing some research, UTEP actually is one of the more explosive teams in the country two games in. They're currently tied for sixth if you use CFBstats.com in terms of explosive plays. So that I did find interesting. The majority of them fall into the 20-plus range category. They have 8 20-plus yard gains. So that'll be an interesting point to watch as well.
It's just that it's purely a Sickos game. It's one that you're at home.
It's a Sickos game, yeah.
Like in Iowa, and Iowa State isn't interesting. Turn it to PTN to watch that one.
Yeah. Okay. But
four 6:30 games, including the Gophers, surprises me. I didn't know that until I just looked.
Yeah, four 6:30 games. Probably the one that most people have their eyeballs on will be Wisconsin traveling to Pullman to play Washington State and the Cougars. This game will be on ABC. The over-under here is 58.5 with Wisconsin favored by 6. Many will remember last year that the Cougars went into Madison and stole a victory. Ultimately, that Wisconsin's Buffalo game last week, Ryan, 38-17, that was a very disconjointed game. I got to watch a little bit of the like 60-minute breakdown. The offense didn't look smooth. They ran the ball really well, but they really tried to throw the ball, and it did not look fluid.
Yeah, Tanner Mordecai looked like a transfer quarterback in game one of a new system, which is to be expected. Chez Malusi, Braylon Allen, they look like Chez Malusi and Braylon Allen, which is one of the best running back duos in the Big Ten. The thing I want to see in this game is, what does Wisconsin's defense look like against a team that has a pulse? Because Washington State, I mean, again, they beat Colorado State last week. Colorado State's not expected to be a great team, but their quarterback, Cameron Ward, threw for 450 yards last week. So It's a team that can't run the ball, that is just going to throw it. And where do my questions lie with Wisconsin? It's with their pass rush. It's with their coverage ability. So I think this is going to be a fascinating game that if and when Minnesota starts to pull away in the second half, flip it over to ABC and see how the Badgers are handling what it looks to be a potent aerial attack.
Yeah, if you look at Kelly Ford's watchability rankings, this is the 10th ranked game, the top one of the top Big Ten games. The 7th ranked game is Iowa at Iowa State. Those are the two top Big Ten games this week. I do think that this is very interesting too, Ryan. I think it'll be a fun watch. Then you've got Maryland playing host to Charlotte. On the season, both teams are 1-0. Maryland was able to knock off Towson 38-6 in their opening win. In this game, the over-under is 51.5, and Maryland is favored 24.5 points.
Death taxes and Maryland looking great under Mike Locksley in the non-conference. I think this is another Taulia Tagovailoa expose. He's going to put up 38, 41, 45 points in this one.
All right. And then the final game for Big Ten teams will feature Temple traveling to Rutgers in Piscataway there.
Take on Minnesota East.
Minnesota East. Over under 44. Rutgers favored by 9. I don't know, man. Rutgers really needs this one if they're going to win a bowl game, right? They were able to get the win against Northwestern 24-7. They looked really good early. You know, I thought as the game went on, I didn't think that Gavin Wimsett made some improvements, but I didn't think it was drastic. And you're right. Northwestern's just bad.
I mean, Northwestern is truly just dreadful. But can I read to you the scoring drives? 16 plays.
Yes, I
16 plays. And I'm thinking to myself, Kirk Shiraka, it's like you never left.
So the question was, was it Kirk Shiraka or PJ Fleck, right? I don't know.
I mean, I think it's PJ. Bold.
Yeah. But they're in lockstep, I think. So.
Yeah, I mean, this is where, you know, I was watching that game on Sunday morning because I'm a sicko. But I didn't realize, it hadn't clicked, like, they have so many former Minnesota players starting for them. Like,
yeah.
Mayan Ahanotu is like a two or a three-time captain for them on the defensive line. Yep. Flip Gibson starting for them at center. Or, excuse me.
Curtis
center,
Dunlap.
Safety. Curtis Dunlap is playing left guard for them.
Yep.
I mean, and plus you have, obviously, the defensive coordinator and Joe Harris-Simiak, offensive coordinator Kirk Shiraka. To me, this game doesn't seem very aesthetically pleasing because Rutgers is so dreadful on offense and they can't generate explosive plays. You know what the highlight of that, I think it was the Rutgers game, was their running back absolutely de-cleated someone in pass pro.
Yes.
I've seen the clips going around. That was the most exciting part about that game. So we'll see what Rutgers has got in store for take two.
All right, so we want to thank you all again for listening to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. Again, please support our sponsors, Comply Foam, Home Field, and Burns Insurance. We look forward to breaking down this game against Eastern Michigan with our buddy Derek Burns. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.